This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
I like the agnostic position. You know, it keeps
no evidence? Come on. You know, that's the thing. The skeptics just love to say there's no evidence, but there isn't.
I'm not saying there's no evidence. The only argument you would make here is what constitutes the evidence, which is the big thing about the Pentagon UAP Task Force report, which is they talk about no evidence that they're spaceships. Well, what evidence are they looking for? Would it be a physical presence that they could touch and measure? In that case, what is Roswell? Oh, we don't know. Do they accept? Obviously, they're not accepting necessarily Roswell as a reality then, because Roswell would mean we have physical evidence. What is the evidence? The problem with the report, of course, is there was nobody sitting there to talk to the press and answer questions. Here's the report. It's a progress report. Goodbye.
Well, there are a lot of problems with the report, and we can get into that in a moment. But, you know, Gene, something that you point out there in terms of this entire dialogue, which is, again, kind of fascinating to me, is looking at this report and imagining, I guess, the people who have written this report. I've done this myself. I would love there to have been a press conference where we could say, you know, have you guys, you know, looked at Blue Book? Have you guys read supplementary information about this subject? Because let me tell you, as a layman, as an avocationalist and history nut, I'm not a historian, but I'm a guy who likes history, and I advocate proper scholarly approaches to historical inquiry. How a historian would work is they would look at primary source material, and then they would, of course, look at secondary source material, and they will build their argument based on the most relevant data that helps them essentially create a narrative with reliable source materials. That may not have been necessarily a historical inquiry, what the UAP task force was trying to do, but I think that it might have helped to phrase what they were looking at. Naturally, they want to look at the most recent data, the best instrumental information that's been collected in support of the reality of a phenomena. That seems to be what they did. But I worry that they are basically collecting a bunch of information without any kind of historical context that might help them frame that narrative. For instance, when we look at the recent report, they state that our data collection goes back to 2004. Well, first of all, what's very obvious about this is they're talking about the USS Nimitz incident and forward. But they further clarify for us that most of the data was collected within the last 2 years. We can also ascertain that most of the 144 cases that they outline in this preliminary assessment probably were gathered by the Navy, because the U.S. Air Force didn't actually institute this formalized reporting mechanism until late last year. Paradoxically, the authors of the report also note that because of the historical or the recent history of the U.S. Air Force's involvement, again, they're talking about them adopting this reporting mechanism like last year, but I'm looking at that and I'm thinking to myself, did anybody tell you about Project Blue Book? Did you know about it? This doesn't appear to have fallen within the purview of what this task force is looking at.
Sorry, I have to just jump in. That's on okay. These. You know, they have just taken and not simply moved the goalposts. They have moved it all to a completely different playing field, as if the other one never existed. And Gene, you've pointed this out. We've talked about this with other guests on the show. We can go back to 1947 when they did one of their first preliminary assessments then, and they had then 1,593 cases they were looking at. You know, almost 1,600 cases then, back in the 40s. How many have they got in this report? 140-something?
It's the focus.
Yeah.
Okay, the focus was much wider then. This isn't a nationwide focus of 144. It is the naval sightings.
Yeah, well, okay, that's a fair comment, Gene. Yeah, I mean, if you're saying only military, but I mean,
they didn't even say it was any other agencies.
Right, but when we're talking about back in 47, I mean, they did include a lot of cases that were reported to them by the military, by pilots in the military.
But they didn't limit it to the military, did they?
No, they didn't. They included civilian, you're right. But then again, I mean, that's a good point that you make. But then it also shows how they're kind of arbitrarily leaving out, well, the experience of now, I don't know how many millions of people who have actually seen these firsthand for themselves and already know that it's a reality. Like, we don't, you know, for some of us out here, myself included, I'm not on the fence. Alien visitation is a reality for me and for a lot of other people, who, regardless of what the government tells us.
Yeah, you know, one point I'll add right there, you know, to Gene's observation about the fact that within the purview of what the UAP task force appears to currently be doing, and again, there at thedebrief.org, we have talked pretty extensively since last December about all this and the developments and what level of involvement government has. Despite what we have, as journalists, tried to uncover about all that, there were some surprises in the report. For instance, the involvement of agencies like the FAA, which traditionally has said that they weren't involved, we now know. And in fact, I've been following up on this, but we now know, based on what the report says, that the FAA does collect information and pass that along to the UAP task force. Now, keeping in mind, that's a government agency that is providing data to the Navy's task force, but they are collecting information apparently on pilot observations corroborated by radar or other kind of sensory data that can thereby provide a layer of confirmation to an anecdotal report. When those occur, apparently the FAA is now transporting or transferring that information to the UAP task force, which is, to my understanding, at least based on the FAA's own policy over the years, that's a new development, because as we know, for many, many years, they have essentially forwarded all UFO reports to either the National UFO Reporting Center that Peter Davenport runs, or for a time it was the Bigelow Advanced Aerospace Studies, and before that, the National Institute for Discovery Science, both Bigelow operations.
And let's not forget NARCAP is in there, because they focus on pilot sightings and have very close connections with the agencies because of their focus on aviation safety.
Well, yeah. Now, NARCAP, again, Ted Rowe, by the way, at NARCAP, that is an organization I wish more people would focus on. They're, in my opinion, one of the best organizations involved in UFO, not only data collection, but also raising public awareness about the importance of aviation safety in relation to UFO appearances. They've long used UAP preferentially also. But I also think that Ted Rowe's one of the better analytical reporters and analysts on UFOs. Right now.
Like he and I had a big kind of argument about UAP versus UFO, and in which and we don't really want to go into that much, but suffice it to say, I completely agree with you. I think NARCAP has done some excellent work, and, if we just set aside the issue of the UAP versus UFO and throwing the rest of us ufologists under the bus in the process, their work is really great.
Well, again, you know, the thing is that I think everyone, to an extent, is still grappling with the terminology in terms of how we orient ourselves linguistically with this phenomenon, which goes all the way back to our opening conversation about, you know, the science fiction component with all this. But again, I mentioned New Fork and Bigelow Enterprises because those are the specific ones outlined in the FAA's own orders over the years that they've issued in terms of what air traffic control operators, personnel, FAA personnel are supposed to do if a UFO report comes in. They have always tried to get that information to a civilian UFO organization rather than having to process it themselves. I spoke with John B. Alexander the other day on the telephone about this. You guys, of course, have talked with him over the years, and he had been instrumental in helping or make that arrangement for Bigelow Aerospace because at the time the FAA didn't want to have anything to do with this. And again, John reiterated just like last week, they still, and many other government agencies, don't want to have anything to do with UFOs. And so those were some of the surprises that I think we saw with the report, was that agencies that traditionally, at least within the last two decades or so, that have been averse to having to have any involvement with UAP or UFOs, they have now apparently been at least performing some sort of supplemental role in support of the UAP task force. But how deep that goes and how long it'll last, who knows?
Well, I kind of think that the original initiative with Senator Harry Reid was all partly an indulgence to his friend Bob Bigelow. More to come with Randall, Gene, and Micah. Why don't you do it this time, Micah? You're in
the Paracast.
want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices start at just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
America, do you want to win the spiritual war against the demons currently attacking our land? Step one comes from the Bible. Lay down the law by resting on the law and do your resting on our pillowcases printed with His Ten Commandments. Find them at ProjectPillowTalk.com. Don't sleep on this message. Go to ProjectPillowTalk.com or call us at 877-289-7439. When you call, ask to receive another powerful spiritual weapon free, a CD packed with the secrets of forgiveness using all the instruments of praise written in the Bible, free with your order of our Ten Commandment pillowcases from ProjectPillowTalk.com. Shipping is free too, so call or click 877-289-7439 or ProjectPillowTalk.com. Get your Ten Commandment pillowcases for only $29.95 per set and watch the darkness flee from the light. Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
The distinguished dulcet tones of Micah Hanks, present today on the Paracast. I don't know why I'm starting this routine. I was suggesting that the original $22 million study was very much a give back or give away to Robert Bigelow from his good buddy Harry Reid. But Harry Reid, obviously, as we learn later, has been following UFOs for a long time. What's your perception, guys?
Randall, you want to hit that one first?
No, I think I'm going to let you go for that, because I'm really not as into the, you know, the minutiae of the politics as like both of you guys are very well versed in that and you're constantly following it. Actually, go ahead, Mike. What do you think about that?
I don't count myself among those who wants to necessarily follow the politics, or as we might have said in years past, the exopolitical component of all this. I think there was a time, you know, where we had, again, guys like Steve Bassett and others, you know, who were lobbying, and they felt that they needed to bring more politics into this. You know, we saw an element of that, of course, with Stephen Greer's work, Robert Hastings. By the way, mentioning any of these names is not to be taken as an endorsement. Let me just put that out there. And actually, Robert Hastings, you know, I spoke to him a few years ago, and really, as far as the names I've mentioned, I've always really appreciated Robert's work. I will add that because I think that the UFO and nukes component is very important. But there was a time where, you know, there was this so-called exopolitics kind of community, a sub kind of division within ufology. Now it seems that the UAP-UFO dialogue has moved almost exclusively over into government and politics with relation to its appearance in North America. You can't escape the fact that there are now government, you know, currently active government efforts to analyze and collect data on UAP. And, of course, prior to that, we knew that there were some that were being operated out of the Pentagon for a time, unbeknownst to the public, until 2017 with the reporting by the New York Times. It's become very much a political thing. And so, like yourself, Randall, you know, I think Gene's probably in the same boat. I'm more interested in the phenomena itself, not the he said, she said, here's who was involved, what have you. But it's part of it, and so we have to kind of analyze that, too. Now, coming back to Gene's question about it being kind of a you know, a sweetheart deal maybe for Bigelow, but then we learned that Harry Reid was interested. You know, it's obvious that Bigelow was looking for ways to fund his interest in studying UFOs, and there is maybe a certain altruism in that, but there's also, of course, some self-interest. I think a lot of people have either seen Bigelow as the best thing that ever happened to UFOs, and then others have tried to turn him into a James Bond villain. I think the guy's a human. He's a guy, just like any of us.
Well, okay. Now where I might be able to comment relevantly on Bigelow, again, the reason that he is so interested in it is because he saw them.
Well, his grandparents.
We've got this whole idea that there's no evidence because we have to completely dismiss people's firsthand experiences is just, to me, unfair and intellectually dishonest.
Yeah, so let's talk about Bigelow for a moment as we're working our way out of this hole here. Bigelow, his grandparents apparently had a first-hand observation, and I think that he had some experiences himself. And it's obvious that those anecdotal instances drove his interest in the phenomena. Now, again, this has often been said. In a court of law, a person can be put away for life based on testimony alone, but that doesn't work in a laboratory. And although I understand and respect that, I think that you have to recognize that the UFO phenomena represents an unusual challenge to science in the sense that we can't just reach up, grab a flying saucer, and then put it into a laboratory and observe it and study it and create experiments around it. Now, that does not mean that science cannot be applied towards studying UAP. I actually spoke with Avi Loeb of Harvard University yesterday on a Skype call. And, of course, he's launched this new Galileo project where he is aspiring to try and apply science toward study of UAP and collect data. But, again, we have so much anecdotal information that's been collected. That drove Bob Bigelow's interest. And I think that in terms of understanding the challenge that UAP represents, or UFOs, I'm sick of having to make that distinction, so let's just say UFOs, the challenge that they represent, I think, makes it incumbent upon us to look at the anecdotal data and use that as at least some kind of a guide for what this phenomenon may represent, and, of course, the reality that it seems to represent in our world. So,
okay, let's have a little bit closer of a look at that, too. So we don't get to do science about everything inside a lab. Astronomy and sky watching and meteorology are three really good examples. When we observe a meteor shower, we see them, they are there, it's not a laboratory, they disappear, they burn up. Occasionally we might find a remnant somewhere, but the point being is that the observational data from people who observe meteor showers is considered perfectly scientifically valid evidence. The only reason that the skeptics think that observational data from UFO sightings isn't valid evidence is because they have this notion that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. But that is a subjective interpretation. If we want to be very objective, like science should be, we should be saying that all that is required is valid evidence, period, regardless of what it is. But they use this kind of excuse of extraordinariness to eliminate it from the data set.
Yeah. You know, all points taken. Now, briefly, on the subject of astronomy, let's just clear up a couple of things. You're absolutely right to point out that, you know, we're looking at things that are on entirely, if not different planets, in entirely different, you know, regions of space, maybe even outside our galaxy, when we are looking through a telescope. But there is still nonetheless a degree of repeatability and consistency in the observational capacity that an astronomer has in terms of looking at, you know, stars, planets, and what have you. Now, not the same with meteors, right? But, interestingly, although they are a widely recognized phenomena, a celestial phenomena, today, as recently as the late 19th century, that wasn't necessarily still the case. And we go even further back, and people would have considered it absurd for rocks to have fallen from the sky.
Exactly.
Despite the fact that, of course, telescopes did exist. Now, even more recently, just in the last few decades, reports, for instance, by observers on the ground of sounds simultaneously associated with the passage of meteors or meteorites through the sky, fireballs especially, extremely bright bolides. This was an anomalous phenomenon because people would say it brought my attention to the fact that there was a meteor. I heard it first, but again, if we're talking about something that's several miles away potentially, the sound's going to take several minutes, you know, at most, or at least maybe a few seconds to travel, and yet people were describing an immediate ability to hear something coinciding with these fireball observations. This is something William Marr Corliss and a lot of the Fortean literature has looked at in recent years, but the point I'm raising is that even with a well-understood phenomena, sometimes there are things we can observe that we can't easily explain, and there are even some questions still about things like fireballs, which at one time, maybe as recently as a little more than a century ago, we still actually had doubts about. Now, that's a great corollary for the discussion about UFOs. They seem so outlandish to us right now, and they are so difficult to study in a laboratory, but like other areas of astronomy over the centuries, my belief is that as technology progresses, we're going to find UFOs more and more easy to study, and we will probably get to a point where it's not going to be so hard to provide a scientific perspective on them and actually to study them scientifically. In fact, maybe we're doing that now. Maybe we're getting to that point.
Well, certainly the Pentagon UAP Task Force makes it easier for scientists to say, okay, I'm going to look at this. Because now it's okay. Now I'm not going to be considered a loon if I'm looking for a grant. We're going to grant this to people and then present Micah, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
President Biden has approved sending additional military forces to Kabul to help safely remove U.S. personnel from Afghanistan. In a statement Saturday, the president announced he was sending an additional 1,000 troops to the area, joining the 4,000 already announced. Biden also defended his decision to pull all troops out of the country, saying that the Afghan forces had to fight against a wave of Taliban fighters currently sweeping through the country. And for the fifth straight weekend, protesters took to the streets of France to push back against the country's health passes. Those passes began to be enforced this week, allowing a person to go to a restaurant, use public transportation, and other activities only if they were fully vaccinated, had recently tested negative for COVID, or have a natural immunity. The French government says the health passes were implemented as an incentive to get more people to get vaccinated. You're listening to USA Radio News. More on our top story now. Taliban fighters seized Afghanistan's fourth largest city, Mazar-e Sharif, Saturday and are now poised to move on Kabul. President Biden is ordering more U.S. troops to the capital to help in the evacuation of U.S. personnel from the country. Former U.S. envoy to the Middle East, Dennis Ross, says there's no way to frame American efforts in Afghanistan as a success. He tells Fox News that it's now clear that no amount of investment or training would have helped the Afghan army win.
We've spent close to $100 billion in terms of investing in the Afghan military. They have quickly crumbled. There's no question about that. The Biden administration inherited from the Trump administration an agreement to pull out by May of this year. And the Biden administration made the decision not to pull out at all. Clearly, the Taliban would have focused their guns on us. We're facing a reality where we've been there 20 years. We could have stayed longer, but it's pretty clear no matter how long we stayed, no matter how much we invested in the Afghan military, pretty clear they were going to crumble.
This is USA Radio News.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Hi, this is James Fox. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I'm interested in your conversation with Dr. Loeb.
You know, yeah, Avi Loeb is an interesting guy to me. Let me first say that, of course, I really respect any scientist who, of course, is associated with a major American university, Harvard no less in this instance, who has now said, I want to start looking for UAP. When he and I caught up and talked, I even asked him about the Tic Tac, and he said that would be what we essentially qualify as the kind of UAP we're searching for. Now, of course, Avi also wrote a book called Extraterrestrial, where he puts forward the idea that he thinks it's very likely that Oumuamua, the mysterious interstellar visitor that passed through our little galactic neighborhood back in 2017, might have actually been a representation of alien technology. I do know that a lot of astronomers take issue with his assessment. And really, my biggest issue with that, which, you know, again, I have no problem telling Avi, and I think he would respect me raising this perspective, but again, we're really probably never going to be able to know what Oumuamua was. There are probably simpler explanations for what it is most likely to have been, but we'll never know because it came, it went, it's gone. I have to applaud Avi for saying, maybe for being inspired by the anomalous elements associated with Oumuamua. And whatever it was, whether or not we'll ever know, I think we can agree that there were some weird characteristics to that object. But that seems to have really inspired him. And with the ODNI report back in June, I mean, he read that and said, you know what, scientists need to be looking at this. Now, people can think what they want to about Avi's conclusions about Oumuamua. I say put that aside. Let's look at the fact that a Harvard astronomer and a team of astronomers elsewhere around the country that he has assembled, they are seriously looking at this problem, taking it seriously, and trying to apply science toward it. I mean, I'm very excited about that, and I support his efforts.
Definitely. Like, we're not just talking about, again, here, a UAP. Oumuamua was an object. There's no question about it. It wasn't just right. Some vague thing that was up in the sky. Like, it was tracked for a long time. There was people that attempted to try to communicate with it, even.
You know, an interesting little side note on that. You know, one of the early names that they decided on possibly giving that object, they settled on Oumuamua because, of course, you know, the observatory there in Hawaii that spotted it, this is in the native Hawaiian language, meaning essentially, you know, messenger or, you know, messenger from the stars, I believe, something along those lines.
Yeah, yes.
One of the early names they thought about was Rama.
Yeah, after Arthur C. Clarke's novel. Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty cool novel. I think they've started to make it into a movie, but I don't know whatever happened to it.
Yeah, but I mean, we could go down the list of the apparent weird, almost psychic predictions that Arthur C. Clarke has made over the years. I mean, that's a whole discussion. Yeah.
Well, and to be fair, too, about Avi's observations and the criticism he's gotten from other people, that criticism appears to me to only be based upon their bias, their personal bias, and their cognitive dissonance about the existence of alien visitation or even the possibility of it, because Avi's reasons were scientifically sound.
Yes.
They weren't just guesses. That object, for reasons that we don't know for sure, started to speed up on its way out of our solar system in a way that was not in keeping with the standard principles of celestial mechanics. So then they started coming up with ideas like, well, maybe it's the light from the sun pushing it. Well, you know, why wasn't this observed with a whole bunch of other objects? Well, this is a unique object. Maybe with some other objects it might apply. But this was a heavy object with not a lot of surface area, and Avi himself and some other scientists with him did a bunch of calculations and determined that for that thing to have sped up because of the push from the sunlight, it would have had to have a solar sail like kilometers wide, right? And it didn't. There was no evidence that it did. So that's a scientist doing scientific calculations based on data that was measurable, that they got from a real object, and it didn't fit. So then they said, oh, well, it must be like some kind of outgassing pouring out of the object because it was heated by the sun. So it's venting like a geyser, and it's shooting it. And the more that you try to explain it and come up with these quasi, what I would call pseudoscientific explanations, because they're just guessing. There's no reason to think that an object like Oumuamua, a solid rocky object, would have any interior filled with any kind of moisture that could be heated by the sun and jetted out. And even if it did, the thing was spinning in a way that it would not have provided any meaningful propulsion in the direction out of our solar system. So again, that one fails, right? They cannot explain its behavior.
Well, you know, again, I have to sympathize to an extent with Avi's conviction that this might have represented an actual form of technology, because, you know, I've gotten some pushback from people. You know, when I had him on my program the first time, and I believe you guys spoke to him too, did you not?
We want to.
You want to? Oh, okay.
Yes, Dean was saying we should get him on the show fairly soon. And I just don't know that there's 2 hours of conversation in there. But, you know, what's your impression? Like, he's a genuine scientist.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Could he?
Yeah, in my opinion, I think, again, I've even gotten a little pushback from people who say, well, you know, you seem to really cater to his opinions about extraterrestrials. Again, this is where ideology comes into it, and I've had to clarify, I'm interested in any serious scientist who is trying to apply science toward understanding what these mysteries in our sky may represent. And I think that, you know, again, I actually have a copy of Extraterrestrial, and in the book, and I recommend that people read it, even if you don't draw the same conclusion about Oumuamua, which, we'll never know what it was, but if you don't draw the same conclusion that Dr. Loeb does, read what he has to say, especially as presented in that book about apparently what, you know, the scientific community seems to have, he essentially outlines as an aversion to discussion about the possibility of alien technologies. Avi is simply saying, let's be open to that possibility, and let's recognize the bias in much of academia against that possibility. And it's fine if we want to present, you know, alternative hypotheses that may explain, you know, the mechanics of something like Oumuamua. But I think the more important point that he addresses in the book is the apparent bias against the proposition that alien technology could be detected. And although many who are also in that kind of space right now, in that sphere of research, are less inclined to believe that that's what Oumuamua represented, I think that they actually would agree with Avi in the sense that, as scientists, it is incumbent upon us to look for technosignatures of alien technology. And many are. There are NASA-funded programs that are looking for them. You know, we've got Robbie Kaparapu. We've got Jacob Hak-Misra. We've got a lot of other, you know, actually, I just spoke recently with an astronomer from Arizona who also is, you know, Dr. Chris Impey, very, very interested in UAP and thinks scientists should be studying it. All that to say, by the way, and here's another point that I think should be driven home, The apparent result of the UAP Task Force's report that much of the UFO community was not very excited by, it does seem to have somewhat galvanized interest among scientists who are now saying, okay, yeah, let's turn our telescopes toward this, try to get to the bottom of this. I think that's maybe one of the better outcomes.
Yes. Yeah. Gene, like we've been noticing that, like yourself, there's been a very significant opening up of the general public and the news media to the idea that alien visitation isn't something that should be just laughed off as a joke on every news broadcast.
Right, and if I hear one more person start their article or their newscast with, "The truth is out there," or "So said the X-Files," God, guys, really, come on. Use some imagination, right?
Yeah, and the X-Files. But, I mean, I love the X-Files. I thought it was an excellent show. Yes, a lot of it was fiction, but if you were a fan of science fiction and ufology and the paranormal, all that was there was all kinds of little Easter eggs in there for you to go, oh, that reminds me of, you know, the Nellis Air Force Base incident where, you know, and so it just made it more fun to watch to me rather than to being too critical of it for being fictional.
Oh, yeah. And again, my criticism isn't toward that program. It's the unimaginative journalists out there that think that they have to start every article about UFOs with, "The truth may be out there."
Yeah.
Your knowledge of the UFO subject goes no deeper than having watched a few episodes of X-Files. That much is already obvious.
That's also kind of pathetic. More to come with Gene Randall and Micah, who is definitely never pathetic. Micah, it's your turn. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
We are GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. We've got listeners, lots of them. Around the world, around the clock, our listeners do what listeners do. They listen. And you know what listeners got? Needs. Needs for your products, your services, and money to buy those needs. With our network of over 1,000 radio stations, streaming on the web, and our satellite transmissions, we're reaching our listeners with quality conservative programming. But there's something our listeners don't have. Your offer to meet their needs. Any business needs buyers. But if our listeners don't hear your message, they're still going to buy what they need. Just not from your business. So let's fix this. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message for our GCN listeners. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@GCNlive.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
You know, it's just a matter of not using one's imagination. That's why so-called journalist after journalist will repeat the same cliche. This way, they think by doing that, they're smart.
Is that maybe that they're protecting themselves because of this stigmatization, that if they kind of, you know, introduce it and kind of shrug it off as, well, we don't have to take this too seriously. Like, don't look at me. I'm not a believer. I'm just reporting the news, right? Maybe it's something to do with that. What do you think, Micah?
You point out something, Randall, that has been a long tradition in journalism. I mean, I'm a newspaper hound. I love going back through old newspapers and whether it's physical copies that you find at, you know, thrift stores or it's, you know, newspapers.com. The idea of the wink is an interesting phenomena, especially if you've done like what Thomas Bullard and others have done, you know, go back over all of the airship reports from the 1890s. A lot of historians who've looked at that aspect of all this have tried to understand, you know, which stories contain the wink. And what the wink is when a journalist is dropping an obvious reference to something that locals will recognize that will signify that the article is just a joke. You know, that is certainly something that you've seen throughout the years where a reporter will indicate in a lighthearted way that we're just kind of messing around and this report maybe shouldn't be taken entirely seriously. And in the modern context, you know, with all the concern about things like fake news and what have you, I think a lot of journalists now would be afraid to report on something that they didn't take seriously, but they may still, like in the case of UFOs, want to convey to those in the know that they don't take it seriously, even if they're reporting seriously on it. So, again, like you say, Randall, it's kind of an escape for them. I had to report on UFOs because this was a story, but I don't want to be ridiculed, so please know I'm going to put some humor into it, right?
Yeah. Well, it's an improvement anyway. At least now they can write a serious article with a couple of conditions and terms. Eventually, they won't have to do that anymore.
Right, yeah, in the future, nobody will read anymore.
Let's not get into that.
Okay, so let's just touch a little bit again, you know, going back to the kinds of evidence that we were talking about, and you are talking a lot about science, Micah, and I appreciate science, but one of the things that I think that we need to be very careful of in ufology is not to call it a science, because it's not a science. It can never be a science. It's too wide a field for it to be classed as a science. And once we start calling ufology a science, then we open ourselves up to the criticism of the skeptics who will say, well, you're just a pseudoscience. And we hear them call ufology a pseudoscience, even though it doesn't fit the definition, because there is such a large cultural phenomenon to it. Most of ufology is a cultural phenomenon and a historical phenomenon. It's not something we study in a lab. Therefore, constantly trying to make it into something scientific, I think that can be risky in terms of inviting the skeptical sharks to attack.
Yeah, all very good points. You know, here's the interesting thing about science and ufology. I'm very much a proponent of science being applied toward the UFO subject, or whatever you want to call it. But I think that part of the problem is that there is no science of UFOs, right? Like you said, the term ufology is, I think, a term that has become recognized in past decades. And just like UFO, I would still advocate its use as far as it representing a person who looks at the subject of UFOs, or maybe more broadly, ufology being the study of UFOs. But I don't think that there can be said that there is a science of UFOs, because there are, again, inherent limitations to how much science can be applied toward the study of UFOs.
And it's a small amount of the overall field of ufology. Well, like I define it for use on our website, the USI site, as the array of subject matter and activities undertaken in the context of an interest in UFOs, particularly the investigation, study, and analysis of UFO reports. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because we've got festivals, we've got films, we've got books, we've got fiction, we've got art. I mean, how do you put that all into a lab and call it science? You can't. Therefore, it's not reasonable to say, well, ufology is a pseudoscience because there's an artist who drew a picture, right? That is not using critical thinking on the part of the skeptics. They need to back off from this. There's plenty of pseudoscience in medicine, lots of quacks. Many that have been proven to be completely false, but we don't call medicine a pseudoscience because there are a whole bunch of quacks. In fact, there are more quacks in medicine than in ufology. I actually looked it up. It's odd, but it's true.
In medical practice, yeah, that's a valid phenomenon. And there are actually, again, skeptics who have pointed that out. And I actually think that it's important that that issue be raised. That's outside the scope of the conversation, but I'll just say this much about it. That is, to me, a far more concerning and pressing concern as far as issues go than worrying about who is claiming to apply science toward UFOs and failing to any degree. And again, what you were describing there, Randall, is the culture surrounding UFOs. In the absence of science being applied toward it, and also an acknowledgement of the limitations as far as how much science can be applied toward this ephemeral phenomena, I think that there has been, as a result, a culture built around it. And what we do see, and this is, I think, the cognitive dissonance that you were describing there, skeptics often criticize the UFO subculture and say that this is pseudoscience. And again, it's like saying, I'm going to go to a music festival and call them all pseudoscientists for not being...
Yeah, I'm going to call the band UFO a bunch of pseudoscientists. Because I'm going to call the Foo Fighters pseudoscientists.
Exactly. I mean, is it really
it's absurd.
By the way, did you know the name of the record label the Foo Fighters record on?
No, what is that?
Roswell.
No!
What could be more awesome than that?
I'd love to talk to Dave Grohl. I bet there's some UFO stuff going on.
Come on.
Yeah, they'd be fun.
You know, he just hasn't been as vocal about it as Tom DeLonge, apparently.
Yeah. Tom who?
You know, there's a whole lot of...
That was the last time anyone even heard from Tom DeLonge. He seems to be a phantasm. He's
on
faded out
or something.
I'll tell you something about that. You know, I have a unique connection to Mr. DeLonge in a roundabout way.
Well, you have my sympathy, sir.
Here's the story. Here's a real quick story because it's one for the road.
I always wanted one for the road. Why am I interrupting? Go ahead, please.
That's okay. No. My brother, Caleb, who some fans of the Paracast may know, because, you know, Caleb occasionally will attend events with me and things where I'm talking about UFOs. Gene, one year that you and me and Caleb and a few others actually were all out there at the UFO Congress together, you know, Caleb would come out there with me. But Caleb for a time actually worked for the To the Stars Academy. Now, he didn't live out there in California or anything. He was right here in Asheville, North Carolina, where I reside. But he was working as an artist. When the initial To the Stars Academy appeared online, you know, they were basically a media site, and they were doing articles about UFOs and things, and Caleb was an illustrator. And he told me that, you know, Tom DeLonge actually called him for the quote-unquote interview for the job, and he was hired. But he actually spoke to Tom, which was kind of fun for Caleb because he always enjoyed Blink-182 growing up, you know, the band. And, you know, I'll admit, with all fairness, I wasn't exactly a huge fan, but I thought it was very cool that Caleb actually got to talk to him. Now, at some point, they basically let everyone go and said, you know, we're going to kind of take this company in a different direction. Didn't really tell everybody what direction that would be. So that's kind of where that ended. But then a few months later, the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences manifest, and of course, Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon, all these guys were now a part of that, and it was a very different kind of a thing. But yeah, in the pre arts and science division of To the Stars. My brother, for a time, actually did work as an illustrator for Tom DeLonge. So there's my story.
Okay, my only connection to a rock star was I had a brief conversation with Kirk Hammett of Metallica, which is kind of embarrassing because I can't remember ever even listening to Metallica, except that Kirk listens to the Paracast.
Which is cool.
We're happy to have him listen to us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Kirk, if you're out there, I'd love to talk to you sometime, too, because I'm a huge fan of Metallica, always have been. But, you know, as far as rock stars that you knew, Gene, you knew the late and very great Timothy Green Beckley.
Yes, and I remember how Jim Moseley would call him Timothy Greed Beckley. Speaking of late people, yeah, it's kind of sad to see people I grew up with, literally. I mean, I knew Beckley when he was 13 years old and I was 15. And he went before I did. And that's really, really kind of sad. We got more to come. Nothing sad about it, but no, I won't break it. I should mention, though, in terms of being around, I, as some of our listeners know, will be undergoing some kind of heart stuff later this month and possibly in September. I still expect to be here. It's not open heart surgery, you know, where they carve open your chest and they put you on a heart and lung machine and all that good stuff and you spend weeks recovering from it. It's much less invasive. But when you get to be 5,000 years old as I am, you do have to do that. I mean, I've already had my eyes replaced. I've had cataract surgery. And now I see better than I did since I was 10 years old because I need no correction for anything, not even reading glasses. So maybe everybody should go out there and get their cataract surgeries done if your insurance will cover it. Gene, Micah, and Randall, I have no idea why I did this. You're in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Classic science fiction at its best. Available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.